Hi, and welcome to Jesus Over Everything, a short practical podcast that mixes encouragement, the Bible, how-tos, and fantastic interviews for the listener on the go. I'm Lisa Whittle, and I welcome you to the Joe Interview Show with me, which I trust and pray will be time well spent. My guest today is an absolute fireball, a business coach who tells it like it is and does it with a heart fully devoted to Jesus. She's an entrepreneur who turned her own business into an incredible business and coaching career, and she has a new book out called Fear is Not the Boss of You. It's certainly not bossing her around lately. She's funny, honest, and truly loves the Lord. We talk about owning our space, if that's innate or learned, why that over-explaining stuff has to go, and why women are scared to succeed. Yeah, it's a great conversation. I learn a lot from this woman. She makes me want to truly own my space, which I appreciate. Here she is today on Joe. Jennifer, this is going to be fun, girl. This is going to be a fun, fun show.
This is so much fun. We've talked, you know, so much. But yeah, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you.
Well, by the time this show airs, I will have been with you at the Equipped Conference in Kansas City. I'm super excited about that. You are such a huge motivator of women, and you do a lot. You're a business coach. You have your own show. You have this conference you run. You wrote a book, all your online stuff. What's your favorite thing you're doing right now? Like right this very minute, this is my favorite thing.
Oh, honestly? Oh my gosh. Let me think about that for just 1 second. The book stuff is fun. And maybe it's just because it's new. I mean, I've been business coaching for like 4 years. We've had the conference before. I've had the podcast for several years. So I think maybe it's just the newness that I like. I kind of dig change. And so I think right now that's my favorite. It also is, by the way, the scariest because, well, you know, yeah. Since we haven't done it before, we don't know what we're doing and, you know, yeah. Just kind of living on a wing and a prayer over here. But yeah, that's a great question. I love that.
Well, I can relate to that feeling of like, it terrifies me, but it exhilarates me. I think that is the true mark of someone who likes to, you know, be producing and being a business person. And it, like, that's kind of a mark of that type of personality. And I can relate to that in many ways. But here's something that I love about you. You own your space. That's like something, when I think of you, I think she owns her space. Are you just a person with a lot of confidence?
No.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Well, and that's, I love that you think that I own my space because there's times I'm like, where is my space? Where is, you know, I want to be outside of the box, but I don't even know where the box is. Like, so I'm so glad that you think that. I feel like I've just always kind of been comfortable in my own skin. But I've had a lot of other areas where I struggle. I have an entire chapter about this actually in the book about the difference between confidence and courage, because I think so many people are waiting to be confident and waiting for their feelings, you yeah. know, to be the thing that kind of lights them on fire. And when they feel confident, they're going to do X, Y, and Z. And I have tried to really live my life from a different angle, which is I just need some courage. And I'm trying to live from more of a position of obedience than what I am confidence. Because if I waited until I was confident, Lisa, like, you know, I'd be 6 foot under by the time I did half right. of this stuff. Because like, so the confidence thing is really not a factor for me. I don't know that I'm necessarily confident, but I am pretty secure in who I am. I feel like I really, at this point at 48, I have a pretty good idea of what God wants me to be doing today. I am pretty mm-hmm. confident that he's going to show me what to do, you know, tomorrow and the next day. But I have really literally no idea like where this train is headed. I yeah. just, I'm kind of, you know, just asking God to show up on a daily basis and provide some instruction for me. But yeah, I feel like the area, you know, on the other side of that, like what do I struggle with? It's not necessarily confidence and courage, but I struggle like with people pleasing. Like that's mm. like, that's an area where God's really trying to grow me. And yeah. And where we're working on at the moment.
That is the beauty of walking with the Lord. For a while, like you really do develop sort of this, you know, this holy confidence, this kind of thing that says, I really do trust that he's got me and he's going to give me the next to do or whatever. I do think also age is a beautiful thing in this way as we do get a little bit more comfortable in our skin. So I just needed to ask you that because I thought, you know, I love that you own your space. And that's the way I would put it.
That's such a thoughtful question. And I'd love to tag something on there if I could, because One thing that I have told my audience and the women that I coach many, many times is that I kind of feel like right now we're really in like a day and age where people, you know, they want you to like journal your intentions and set your intentions for the day and manifest this and manifest that. And I really encourage women to do kind of the opposite, which is to record the things that God's done for you and the ways that he's already showed up and provided. Because when I'm like shaking in my boots and I'm like, oh, geez, I got to go, you know, speak again, or I got to go XYZ again. Yeah, I could certainly write in a journal that day how I want it to turn out. But what helps me way more, what I feel is biblical, because the Bible tells us to record and remember, is I feel like going back to all of my prayer journals and being like, oh my gosh, I remember when I felt that way 5 years ago. And then look where God has grown me to it. We think I'll never forget how God showed up. But I can't even remember what I had for breakfast, let alone, you know, the miracles that God may have performed in my life, big or small, a couple years ago. So I really, that helps me to feel more confident about different situations when I look back and I'm like, yep, he showed up there and he showed up there and he showed up there and okay, let's go. So
that is a good word. That is a good word. That is a good biblical word, because remembrance is so important, because when we recall and we remember what God has done for us, it changes many things. We don't worry as much. We don't have as many fears. We really do walk in a different way. So that's a really good word. Well, I also love that you make me feel unapologetic for things God has called me to. That's another thing that I like about you. I talk in my new book, Jesus Over Everything, about the deadly overs. And these are sort of go-to behaviors and habits. And one of those is over-apologizing. And so I'm guessing that maybe you didn't struggle with or don't struggle with that one as much. But here are the others. Yeah.
I think I do, girl.
Okay, well, listen to the rest of the list, because one of them, another one might hit you. So we've got over-apologizing, over-analyzing, over-explaining, overindulging, and overworking. And we all kind of bend towards one. Sometimes in different seasons, we go toward another one. Which one, when I say those, most personally resonates with you?
Possibly over-explaining, which I think is tied to over-apologizing, because oftentimes I have, at this point, we have 9 people who work for me. And I even find myself apologizing to my team, you know, sorry that I'm 5 minutes late, you know, for the meeting, but some, you know, and then I'm like going into the 10-minute dissertation right of why I'm 5 minutes late. So I do feel like I fall into both of those. Overworking is something that I'm really like, I didn't think that that was me, Lisa. I really didn't. I've put a lot of great boundaries up in my life, but with the current season of my business, which has really exploded in the last 24 months, and then the book launch and the conference, I am really working more right now than what I probably ever have and what I want to. And even when I'm not in front of the desktop and I'm not in front of the computer, I'm still working in my mind and I'm still thinking of, you know, content and ad strategy. And like, I'm having a really hard time mentally shutting that off right now. And it feels really vulnerable to even tell you that. But I would say overworking is where I am currently struggling the most.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that so openly, because here's the thing. I relate to that. I really relate to that. I'm in one of the busiest seasons of my life. I've launched 3 things in the last 3 months, and it has about taken me out. I have a creatives calendar on my wall right now with the 4 months at a time. Lindsay Letters, love it. But if you saw it, like you might pass out. I mean, I'm sure it looks like yours. But there's so much on it that I literally had someone come over the other day who also is very busy, and she's in ministry. And she said to me, she said, "What in the world? Like, how are you even doing this calendar? I don't even understand." And so I understand what you're saying. And I think for people who are content creators, for people who really love to work and who feel very fulfilled in their work, it is a very, you know, it's a hard thing to know, am I working because I love it? And if is this a healthy work, or am I overworking? Because obviously work is great. It's just the overworking, and the overs are what we get into. So I appreciate you sharing candidly, and I can relate. I think looking at it is the most important thing, and that's where we can really get some help with that. So on the same subject, you wrote this on social media not long ago. And when I say the same subject, I mean the subject of work. You said this: just because you love the Lord does not mean you are called to be a doormat. Now, I tell you, Jennifer, I loved this so much. One of the things I've struggled with in the past was over-explaining why I charged for something, okay? Or what I charged, or just over-explaining that in general. You talk about not feeling guilty for charging for your services, which gets really tricky when it's like ministry and what all those things. So,
but at ministry, like it was interesting. I was just talking to somebody in your field the other day, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but with menopause brain, I don't know if you have that yet, Lisa. I have a feeling you don't. I think I'm older than you. But literally, if I don't like say it when it comes to my brain, I literally will lose it. But I was telling somebody today, the other day, that like ministry is very equivalent to like therapy in a way. And I pay a therapist. Like, why do we expect ministry to be free when therapy isn't free? I mean, of course, there's certain times that God will ask you to minister to people and, you know, but ministry, like it shouldn't always be free. Like just because we're believers doesn't mean we're called to be working for free.
Well, I think women, I'm going to say creatives. I think a lot of us struggle with having money conversations, especially if you're a creative and it's like, it's a little bit subjective, like what you're charging for something. Am I saying I'm worth all of this or whatever the case may be? And so people really struggle with this, but why do you think it's really important not only not to feel guilty about being very, you know, responsible in this conversation, but also, you know, not over explain it?
Well, and are you talking about like over-explaining why you're charging what you are? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that, yeah. I mean, even if it's something charging or if it's even like why maybe you can't, you know, why your services can't be utilized there or why, you know, just anything that you need to draw a hard line on maybe or be a boss about maybe, you know?
I think like where things get a little loosey-goosey and it gets a little more complicated is when people are kind of leading with faith. Which, you know, people who are in ministry are. But then I think, gosh, some of the biggest, you know, things that changed like the trajectory of my faith have been paid Bible studies I've been in, books by, you know, Stephen Furtick, Bible studies by Beth Moore. When I think about the conferences, the Women of Faith conferences that I've gone to, you know, those are all things that I paid for. And so sometimes I wonder if it's us women who love Jesus who are concerned about people saying, well, why are you charging for that? Or why are you charging that much when you know, are supposed to be a Christian? Or is that just like this made up, like vain imagination type of thing? Because the truth is like in my 5 years of being online, Lisa, I don't know that I've even had one single person say, why are you charging? You know, I have one program that's $47 a month and another that's $1,200. And I've never had anybody say, I can't believe you're charging for this because you're a Christian, because there's so many other places I'm giving out free stuff all the time. You know, I'm praying on Facebook Lives. I've got a podcast that is twice a week I'm delivering. I've got a blog that's 12 years long of content. And so there's plenty of places they can get things for free. But you know, I believe that the Bible says that God gives us wisdom to get wealth. I look at like the Proverbs 31 woman and she worked and she made money. And when I look at like so many women who are giving their services away for free and yet they're running, you know, really tight without a lot of margin in their life, it like grieves me because I think that it comes from like this weird money mindset that a lot of people have. Usually those come from like childhood. I think it's like repositioning how we think about money is the thing that will actually be most helpful rather than I don't think it's even most of the time that women feel like they can't charge for their services if they're in ministry. But I actually think it's like a money mindset issue that they need to address with the Lord first and make sure that they're thinking about money in a way that's both biblical and healthy. And then I think the rest of that stuff just kind of becomes like no more of a big deal.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And I think, first of all, for me, it is a little bit of a tricky subject. I do think I've also heard a lot growing up in the church that has played into it, narratives and things people have said. Also, just people who are just super suspicious of anything. And then also there, you know, been some people who have gone a little crazy in ministry that have done things with money that aren't great. So there's all those things at play. But to me, it's even just the principle of, in general, I think some of us as women struggle to just be a boss, just don't feel comfortable in that space and feel like we have to explain and qualify everything that we do. And I think it's super important that we get out of that. And your book helps with that. Fear is not the boss of you. Congratulations on your first book, Jennifer. I'm excited for you.
Thank you. It was like being pregnant for 4 years.
Oh my gracious. I feel you every step of this way, my friend.
Oh, it's the wildest process.
It is. And I've heard you say this is not a business book. And then I read things like the world is selling you a work hard mentality when what you need is a pray hard revelation. When I read that, I'm like, nope, that's not a business book. Who is this book for?
Yep, that's a great question. This book is for any woman who is or has been or will be in the future either stuck, completely overwhelmed with indecision, or paralyzed with fear. And then so it applies to women in business and it applies to business because I really wrote the book for the woman who's like, gosh, there has to be more to life than this, but I feel so stuck. I don't know what to do next. I can't decide anything. You know, I have an inkling God may want me to do this, but I don't know. And so I stay stuck for another 10 years. And then, you know, I have an opportunity to do something, but I'm scared. And so this book is for that girl.
I feel like that is, boy, a whole ton of us, right? So, okay, what would you say to someone? What do you want to say to someone right now who's listening, besides buy the book, please, and read about it more, because it really does go into in-depth, a lot of stuff in there, great stuff. But what would you say to someone right now who's listening who feels very stuck? What would you say to them?
Well, I chomped the book into a couple of different sections. And we talk, the very first chapter is about how being stuck stinks. And it does, because when you're stuck, you affect so many other people around you. And so, you know, so much of the books that are out currently on bookshelves, while they may be great books, they're really leading people just to continue like looking to themselves. They're leading people back to themselves. And I'm really in this book focused on making you look outside of yourself and pointing you back to your creator and pointing you towards the people who need for you to really show up for your life, not in a way that's like shameful or putting more pressure on you. But if you're stuck, you can't tell me that if you're married, that that's not affecting your spouse, because it is. Like, I can remember when Jason and I, we had like $0. Like, it's so crazy where God has like, you know, taken us from where we used to be. But, you know, we were stuck like financially, and I can remember being stuck and the amount of pressure that was on both of us. And then I was stuck like trying to like build the business, and how do we build the business while I stay home full time and take care of the kids, and I'm still building the business. And then, you know, I got stuck when I was trying to shift out of the painting company. I was stuck for a year making that decision. I just think it's so important for women to realize where they're stuck at. I take you through like, okay, where are you stuck? Okay, how did you get there? Because sometimes, you know, I think stuck is kind of handed to us, and we were kind of given stuck with circumstances. We were raised by stuck parents. And so when stuck is all you know, then that's all that's familiar to you. And I have a quote in the book that, you know, people will stay with what's familiar, even when familiar is bad, because at least familiar that they know. And so once you can figure out kind of why you're stuck, and then you've got to figure out, okay, but what is more important to me than the security of staying here? And so for me, I talk about this in one chapter, it comes back to an algebra problem of like, remember when you were in algebra and you did the greater than sign? So what's greater to you than your fear, and what's greater to you than staying comfortable where you are stuck? And for me, that's, you know, I have a God in heaven that I believe loves and adores me, but he also has expectations for me here on this side of heaven. God does have a plan for each of us. And there's also like, not urgency, but we can't stay where we're at forever. I mean, it's affecting the people around us. God needs you to be at least making some forward motion of some sort. And then I think too, that we have a community of people. We have our family, of course, our spouses and our children who are watching us, and they deserve an unstuck mother who is free. And we have a community who's watching, and maybe that's just the girl next door, or maybe it's a, you know, huge social media following, but people are always watching. And when they see you really like getting unstuck and kind of like taking your place in the world on who God created you to be. And that doesn't necessarily mean running a business that can look like so many different things in so many different seasons, but that really gives them the freedom to fight for their own life, to get unstuck as well. That was a long answer to why you can't stay stuck.
Well, it was a great answer. It was really, really good. And I know that somebody listening needed that exact answer right now. You also say that women are often scared to succeed. I think you're right.
Oh, heck,
I think
yes, you're right. They are. Yeah.
Why is that and how can we change it?
Oh, well, there's a lot of reasons. So, you know, I think that there are an equal number of women who are just as afraid of success as they are a failure. I've coached thousands and thousands of women.
Right.
And I'm shocked that as many of them are scared of success as what are a failure. And so, and you can tell a woman scared of success when she starts self-sabotaging. And like, yep. I give an example in the book of my friend Carrie. I know she won't mind that I share this here as well. But I can remember Carrie and I used to be in a mastermind together. And she's brilliant. She's in the health and wellness space. And she was building her Facebook page and selling her supplements. And she was running a Facebook ad to get like more likes on her Facebook page, which was really popular, you know, 5 years ago or so. And she got to 20,000 followers on Facebook, and her ad was like super successful at like, you know, 10 cents a like or something crazy that you can't get in the year 2020. And she turned her ad off. And I remember asking her, "What are you doing?" And she's like, "I don't know, but I hit 20,000 and suddenly I freaked out." And so I have my own stories in the book about those freak out sessions too. And that's a woman who's afraid of success. And usually it's because you're afraid of how the people around you are going to address you or feel about the situation. Maybe it's just me, Lisa. I don't know. But we all know people who are like, "Well, you used to X, Y, Z," or, "Oh, now you're too good for me," or, you know, and they say things maybe in jest, but you almost sense that there's this like, they're more comfortable with you staying smaller. And so I think women are scared about success because of that. And it kind of makes the other people be like, "Okay, well, I got to kind of look at what I'm doing," you know, and that's uncomfortable if you're the one. There's a saying that the first one through the window gets bloody. And so if you're the first one in the family, the first one to, you know, go to college, the first one to buy a home, the first one to do something different kind of than what is the norm for your family or your friend group, that's a very uncomfortable feeling. And so a lot of women will keep themselves smaller than what they're supposed to just because that's way more comfortable. And so, and then another thing is when a woman starts feeling like she's seeing some success in life or business, sometimes you start thinking, okay, this is great right now, but can I sustain it? Am I about to lose it all? Yeah. Is God going to snatch it all away from me? Which is something that I write about has been my personal experience. Like, God's given all this to me. I wonder if at any moment he's just going to snatch it all away. And so, you know, I've had to go to some good Christian therapy. I've paid for good Christian ministry, Lisa.
Yes. And I am I'm such a proponent of that as well. And I'm so grateful for those Christian therapists who have helped me a lot as well. So many good things. So many, many, many good things. I appreciate so much. Oh, and just a lot of really good truth that you share online in the book. Just a lot of good stuff, Jennifer. So this show is called Jesus Over Everything. I know how much you personally love Jesus. When I say Jesus over everything, what does that personally mean to you?
I mean, when you say Jesus over everything, I kind of feel like when I gave my life to Christ when I was 16 years old, I was raised Catholic. And a Catholic, like my parents didn't go to church, but they sent me to a Catholic, like CCD classes and things, and was baptized in a Catholic church, et cetera. But I went with my best friend to a non-denominational church when I was 16 and got saved the first time I went with her, got filled with the Holy Spirit. Like, it was like a radical salvation. And then I walked away from the Lord for a good 12 years in my college years and early 20s because I was a knucklehead and, you know, God used certain things to bring me back to my first love with him. But when I hear you say Jesus over everything, it's kind of two-sided for me because I think, okay, that to me means I need to make sure that I'm putting him first and foremost and that he gets first rights to everything. He gets the first say, you know, that sort of thing. But then I also think about how, like, I feel like when I gave my life to Christ that day, I kind of also gave up my right to decide and my right to have an opinion on. I mean, I think opinions are fine, but I think that when I said, "Okay, Lord, you know, here I am, use me," that I don't necessarily get to have a say anymore in how he uses me. And that, oh, by the way, he's not going to use me in a way that isn't really going to be good for me and also good for him because he's like a good boss. You know what I mean? Like, you'd never hire somebody just to set him up for failure. And so, you know, when I think Jesus over everything, I think, okay, he gets first rights to everything. He's the decision maker, regardless of how I feel about it.
Well, thank you so much. It's goals for me. I mean, I'm not there, but I sure want him to be over everything in my life. And you said that so beautifully. You're exactly right. What he's a good father. What he has for us, what he wants for us, what the way he set up this world, this life to be is the way that it will work. And if he has something that he asks us to do, it is for our good. And I just wish we could understand that more. So in season three, we're doing something. We're looking back a little bit just to kind of let people in on a little bit of who we were. I wonder if you could just give us a few words about who was little girl Jennifer, high school Jennifer, that would have been fun to watch, and Jennifer of today. Just maybe a few words of each of those phases of life.
So Jennifer, when I was little, I think that Jennifer was nervous and scared quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And so things weren't always safe. And I learned how to be a people pleaser in order to create a very safe environment. And there was a lot of questions, a lot of unknowns. And so that's how I remember her as a little girl. As a, like a high schooler, I just remember I was always kind of, I think I was a really late bloomer is the honest to goodness truth. And so like I was kind of just the girl that was always in the shadows, like the friend of the really popular girls, the friend of the really athletic girls. And so I think that when I was in high school, I never knew where I fit because I could fit in a lot of different places, but I didn't really know who my people were exactly. I mean, I had lots of friends, but you and if you're somebody that doesn't fit, you know when you don't fit. Let me just say that. And so the girl that came after that, she was stuck a whole lot and stuck in bad relationships and then got married to my husband, thank goodness. And then, you know, we've been stuck in different seasons of financial hardship and stuck for 4 years when we were trying to adopt and it wasn't happening. And we've had, we have three biological children and our little girl that we're adopting, but we've also had two miscarriages. And so there was like a season where it just felt like I was hanging on by my bare, you know, knuckling it and where things were hard for a while. And now I feel like the Jennifer today is like things are still kind of hard, but they're a different hard. Taking in a girl that's 4 years old when you've got a senior. That who comes to you from hard places. That's hard. That's hard going back to kindergarten, you know, folders. And so we're in a different type of hard now. And I'm so glad that we came out of the season we were in that was hard before. But the Jennifer now, she knows she can do hard things. And I don't know if that's come with age or just God showing up time after time after time. But I have like a deep, so appreciative of the life that God is letting me live right now. Like this deep appreciation. Like sometimes I look at it and I'm like, how is this even our life? Like, how do I get to do everything that I get to do? And so even though there's certain things that we're going through that are still hard, you know, in terms of I'm getting ready to launch a kiddo to college and, you know, the little one and the adoption process and all that is kind of messy and sticky. But overall, like, I just feel a deep sense of, like, contentment right now. Is that a good word? It's are hard, but I'm still content.
Oh, contentment's a great word. I think contentment, to me, is always going to be a goal. And it's just a place that, boy, if we can get to a place of contentment, I think that is a really, really neat thing to do. Well, here is my last question, and I ask it of every single guest. What is the last thing you'd say about Jesus if you could only say one more thing?
Best decision ever.
Well, that is a big amen. And I have really enjoyed this conversation. It has inspired me, encouraged me, made me laugh, all the things that I think you have been gifted by God to do. And I'm grateful for you. And I can't wait to serve with you and see how God uses this book and you with the world. So thank you so much for coming on.
Lisa, you're amazing. Can't wait to hug your neck in real life. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Jesus Over Everything with Lisa Whittle. If you like what you're listening to, share it with a friend by letting them know about what we do here so they too can be inspired and gleaned from this community. And hey, if you haven't already, leave a 5-star review on iTunes. It helps so much in making this show what it is and continuing to spread the word about us. You guys are the best.